We have to make it official every time.
Good. Just me ramp up.
Do you need more? Do you need more excitement on this Thursday?
No, I'm good. I'm in a really good mood. It's not Friday. I'm not exhausted. It's been good so far. Decent week. Just kind of, I had a few things to do. I'm good all day. So is this your only slot, this 9 to 10? You're busy the rest of the time?
Well, I don't know. Just the last couple of days, my day has been stolen from me. So I figure, let's connect when we can. And the kids are back in school. This is the first week where they're going back to school. And, it's kind of they're in TK and preschool. So it doesn't.
So they're actually in school?
They're in school.
At the facilities?
Yeah. Yeah. So, trying to figure it out.
Let's hope they don't bring anything home, get you sick.
I'm sure I've been exposed to whatever a million times by now.
Is that what it is?
What's the new stuff? I guess if you have had it and recovered from it, you can get it again. Is that what they're saying?
Well, it does look like this will be endemic, much like flu that comes back every year, unlike, say, measles, right? Which once you get it, you can never get it again.
Right.
So you don't build up. That's why that's the problem. Funny, I was just looking at something. That's the problem with herd immunity. Sweden tried a soft approach. So basically no masks, no lockdown, just, suggestions and all that. And they never publicly stated they were going for herd immunity, but, that's kind of the unstated, thinking about why they went that way. They're probably one of the only countries that officially just said, hey, we're just going to let this thing run its course. They got less than 10% people with antibodies, 10% of the population. And their death rate is, when you look at it in number of cases per million people, their death rate is higher than the United States at something like 550 deaths per million people. United States is running about 440 per million people. So been kind of unsuccessful. So, thanks Sweden for taking the hit, going out on the limb for the rest of us. I'm sure Donald is very sad because, Sweden is always where he tried to do it like Sweden. And that's been a popular sign at protests. Do it like Sweden.
Well, and the truth is there is no formula for success. There's nothing you can point to say this is the way that we should approach this pandemic.
I've been thinking about that, and I think I agree with you more and more on that point since the last couple times we talked about it. I'm just not seeing anybody that had stellar results short of highly regimented Asian cultures that will do what they're told. Americans just won't do it.
Right, and I think that really concerns me because I think that is a very important point. And I mentioned this to you last time. I think there was an interview last Sunday after the DNC convention. I don't know if it aired on CNN or wherever it was, but I think it was a joint interview with Biden and Kamala. And they had asked him the question, would you lock down, have a national lockdown if you become president? And he said, yes, he would. He would follow the scientists' recommendation. And if they said that we should have a national lockdown, then he would do that. I think he's going to take a lot of heat for that. I think that is going to hurt him. In fact, even people in his own corner I've been reading are urging him to come out and at least soften that answer. Because that alone, if people are thinking a couple of months into the future that, hey, my life under a Biden-Harris presidency is going to mean shelter in place, I'm not doing that. Mm-hmm. So, and of course, my opinion is that whole thing is a crock of shit. It's not, the biggest farce.
Is it a hoax?
No, it's not a hoax. I was reading stories about that this morning too, where there's a lot of people outside of the US saying, why do Americans think it's a hoax? Obviously, I don't think it's a hoax. It is a real virus, but what is a hoax is the fact that politicians think they can prevent deaths. They can't. Politicians don't prevent deaths. Politicians don't create jobs. That's not what they do. They've never been successful. You can't do it. That's why we
Is that the gun analogy? Guns don't kill, politicians don't kill people, people kill people, viruses kill people.
Exactly right. Let it run its course. That's what I say. I honestly believe if this was 10 years ago, go back to 2010, and remember when I think OJ got out of jail, in the last year or two? And they did a bunch of what has happened in the world since OJ was in prison. I think when he went to prison and when he got out of prison, there was no iPhone, there was no Facebook or Twitter. All those things had been invented during the time he was in jail. It's kind of like a Gilligan's Island moment. You know, if you were stranded on an island and you finally got found and you come back to reality, it's like, what world am I living in? And I think that so much just happens in the world. If this was 10 years ago, I honestly believe that there would not be this crazy, insane, I don't want to say misinformation, but just too much information, which leads to, as I coined the term, irrational groupthink. There would not have been this drive to do globally what we did. There would not be this globalization idea of locking people in their homes and shutting things down. Think about it. This came out of China when we heard early on that the Chinese government was imposing lockdowns. No one had ever heard of that before. That wasn't anything that was done or in the playbook. We're going, wow, this is so bad. This is kind of the response was, this must be so bad that the Chinese government is forcing people in their homes. And then I think maybe Italy was next. And it was this domino effect where people said, oh, okay, we should probably do that too. It had never been done. It wasn't done in the 1918 pandemic. Masks were utilized, certainly. But the notion of a shelter in place had never been done. And it wasn't done until the Chinese government in 2020 imposed it. So I guess my point is, if information didn't spread as rapidly as it does in 2020, so pick a time, I'm saying 10 years, certainly 15 years ago in 2005, I guarantee this would not have happened. I do not think that we would be discussing shelter in place, lockdowns, civil liberties, all this other stuff that people are up in arms about, literally and figuratively. Because it wouldn't have happened. And I guess the point is, as we just discussed in the opening, that there's no proof that it works. There's no proof that really anything, with the Sweden analogy that you said, the extreme draconian lockdowns in places like Australia, New Zealand, and China, Hawaii, nothing works.
They've had better, all those places you just mentioned, they've had much better outcomes than
wrong.
We have.
Absolutely wrong. They have not had better. Here's what you need to read between the lines. They've had delayed outcomes. We've had really this massive peak since day one because we didn't, nor could we ever have this national shelter in place. We had individual states resisting that, and then people within those states resisting that. But the point is, these places that have had these draconian lockdowns are now seeing, as the media says, a surge, a concerning surge in cases, because you're only delaying the inevitable. And so the whole point, right, that the scientists said that we need to do that was because we need to slow down the capacity that people are going to inundate the hospitals, the ICU beds. We can't sustain the amount of people that would come in, physically didn't have the equipment like the ventilators. But really, it's just delaying that. And I think these island nations or states are the best example of that. Whether it's in the Caribbean, again, Australia, New Zealand, Hawaii. Did you see Oahu now is on another 2-week lockdown?
You know, it's funny. I haven't seen anything about, I haven't been following Hawaii at all.
Yeah, so there's not a lot of news about Hawaii other than, I mean, if you Google it, it's out there, but you're right. It hasn't made the national headlines. But yeah, I think today, and I'm not sure if it's just Honolulu. I think it's the whole island. Starting today, 2-week lockdown again. So everything that had been previously open with the safety measures in place, I think even outdoor dining, all of that is gone back to what it was when this thing first started because of a quote-unquote surge in cases, which that fucking term boils my blood. And for them, it's like, it's under 300, by the way. It's like 270 cases is the surge for them. And it's a surge because it's going to overwhelm the hospital capacities. What I don't understand is between March and now, how many fucking hospital beds have they added? How many ventilators have they secured to prepare for this moment? To me, that is the fault. That is the liability. That is the problem with looking at how to address what is in front of you that you cannot control. Nobody's been to that island chain, very few people. I think they were averaging 30,000 visitors a day, and now they're under 500. They've been under, I mean, it's been down to like 300 visitors a day to those island chains in the last couple of months. Most of it is residents. Of course, they opened inter-island travel, but there hasn't been any mainland travel. And of course, you can't because you'd be subject to a 2-week quarantine if you go there. How do you explain the surge in cases for people who've been locked in their homes? And it's that way in, you know, several other places that we just mentioned. So what I'm hoping people come to see the light is that this isn't something you can control. And I'm a big believer in that in life. There's so many people worry and they have stress and they panic and they try to control every aspect of life. And there's so many things in our lives that we cannot control. We have to recognize that. And there are things that we can control. Most of that is from within, you know, your attitude, your work ethic, who you associate with, what you do with your time. Those things you can always control. But things like a fucking virus that spread through the air, you can't control it. You don't know if you are in that vulnerable group. I mean, most of the, if you look, I mean, I looked at the US numbers, I don't know about globally, but the bottom line is the vast majority of the deaths are what we would say are the high risk group, you know, first starting with age. And then second to that is underlying health conditions. And yes, there's media reports now of, you know, children are more vulnerable and susceptible than we originally thought. And yes, they could spread it to the teachers. And I'm not drawing the hard line. I'm not the hoaxist, right? I'm not denying that that's true. Mm-hmm. But I'm talking about the vast majority is, like any illness, those that are the most vulnerable are the most susceptible to succumb to the virus. So it's age and it's underlying health conditions. There was a picture I saw today. I don't even know where it was from. There was like a man and a wife and, you know, he was young and it's like, oh, look at these, you know, these people. He was a denier. He was a hoaxist and yet he died of the virus. The fucking media loves pointing that out. You should see the picture of these two. Like, you look at him.
Well, Herman Cain was,
he was 100.
The last place he was that he was seen publicly was the failed Trump rally in Tulsa. He's sitting in the audience with no mask. Mm-hmm. He died 2 weeks later.
He was also 100.
Kermit Cain's not 100. Well, he's nothing now.
Do you see Sean Connery is 90?
Oh, my God, no. I thought you were going to say Sean Hannity.
No.
But that would prove he was actually a disciple of Satan. What about, listen, Dr. Mengele, let me ask you a question. Yes. Are we supposed to just let all the people with the highest comorbidities? Isn't it our responsibility to try to protect the weakest among us, not just say, hey, fuck them and fling them to the wolves? I'm not sure I'm understanding the thinking on that.
Well, when you put it like that, you almost make it sound like we're taking the weakest among us and we're throwing them out into a virus filled room and pumping the AC down to cold and, you know, sneezing on people.
Isn't that what you said?
No, but what I'm saying is, it's not government's place. Politicians can't control the outcome. If you're afraid, stay home. There's so many risks in life, right? There's our existence as a population, as a race, as people, as humans. It's not guaranteed, Mike. I mean, how long have we been on this planet? You know, and how much longer are we going to be here? It's not guaranteed that we're going to be here forever. And we're trying to control things that we can't control.
Just have to get through the end of my life. That's it.
We got a long ways to go for that.
Yeah. I think it's, you know, we're going to know. I mean, a lot of what you said makes sense. I don't think, I mean, quite a bit of it is pretty subjective. So, I mean, we really need to get on the other side of this to look back and see what the real story is going to be. I mean, it's really hard. We are smack dab in the middle of this situation. So I think it's hard to make assessments about even what is, you know, what is successful and what isn't. Hey, nobody understands the concept of control, you know, to be honest with you, better than I do. And it's not about controlling the fate and the outcome and this and that, but you know, when you think about control, you want to make sure that you don't lose sight of the fact that even though you can't control everything, which is the number one issue people have that drives them to self-destructive behavior, you can't influence it. And that's what you have to try to do. So you can't control everything. But when there are things you can do to influence the outcome, you should do them, especially when they're in a humanitarian vein.
And I will tell you, I can get hung up in the semantics of things because I think it's important. And I think you're right. There's a lot of things that people should do, but there's a fine line between what they should do and what they should be required to do. And
well, yeah, and I'm okay with that. I mean, I've also thought a lot about that since our last conversation about those issues. I'm not here today to, you know, tell you.
You said you were in a good mood, so I'm trying to break that, trying to fire you up a little bit.
Look, here's the thing. Our best conversation is when I'm not all, you know, verklempt and beside myself.
Well, we got plenty of time for that.
Yeah.
I have some stuff queued up for you.
Well, that's good. That's good. I think that this is, obviously this is the, you know, this is the topic of the day, right? I mean, how are we dealing with this? You know, it is getting old. I will tell you that. I talked with one of our associates, you know, today, who asked me if I thought we were going to have a sales meeting. You know, and then what do we call February or March? Is that the spring? I don't know.
Late spring, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. And I said, hey, I seriously doubt it.
Yeah.
You know, well, for many reasons, right? But, yeah. But you know, this could still be the reason why we don't do it. Right?
And I think that's where there's this fatigue that people are tired of this. And I think that's where it's starting to go, because it's how far do you look out into the future? So here we are now, a week before Labor Day, schools around the country are trying to figure this out, how to restart. And where we are in California, certain counties are coming off this watch list, you know, because Newsom knows best what he's watching for. So we have this watch list, and San Diego and Orange County have come off the list. But then you have to meet certain requirements for 2 weeks before some of the restrictions can be removed. And obviously schools is one where before people can go back to school, you got to be off the list for 2 weeks with no bump in cases.
That's where we're at in Orange County right now.
Yeah, that's where we're at. So we're, I don't know, what, 4 or 5 days into that period.
Being off the list, yeah.
Right. So for public schools, you still can't go back on campus. They're doing this remote learning, which is not learning. Nobody's learning anything. So really, they're just delaying their education. And the question is, how long are we going to delay this? You hear people talk about that this is going to continue until the winter break, which, so for most schools, you know, they break around the holidays and they go back in early January. That's such an arbitrary time frame to pick. And here we are in the Northern Hemisphere, where that's usually the time when we have the regular flu season and everyone's getting sick from everything else. So to pick that timeline is not based in anything other than false hope. So people are starting to figure, well, shit, if this is going to continue to January, you're hearing things like the cruise lines are canceling their schedules into 2021. I think it was, Facebook or Twitter. I have no desire to go on a cruise, even before all this.
Well, I mean, forget all the bad things about cruise, like, you know, being stuck with people you don't know and all that. I mean, just from a health standpoint, would you get on a fucking cruise ship now? Ever?
No, I would never get on a cruise ship. But that has nothing to do with this.
Take all the other stuff out of it. Just this, if this was the only concern, you loved everything else. You love the buffets. You love meeting new people. You love being stuck in close proximity to the great unwashed. Take all that out and say you're okay with that. And you love to go on cruises. Would you go on a cruise right
Absolutely,
now?
Absolutely, yeah.
In a closed environment for the most part with a pandemic raging through the population?
Absolutely. Because there are other things that we have all done, you included, that carry risk. So, and by the way, if these fucking Democrats have their way and they, you know, take away airplanes, then we're all going to be on cruises. So, yes, I think,
what was it? Was it United or Southwest? I can't even remember which one. One of the airlines is using this as an opportunity to slash 28,000 jobs. So, you know.
Well, I think American, their number that they published was 19,000, I think, coming in October.
They're going to be healthier and shit. They're not going anywhere.
I didn't see United or the others. But, yeah, because they're living off government money right now.
Yeah, it's going to be good to fly on an airline that's cut a third of its staff. Because when you do that, some things just don't get done, right? And on airlines – that's one thing if it's a pizzeria and some things don't get done. It's another thing if it's an airline and some
like
things
the safety
don't get
checks.
Done.
Yeah. Yeah. I forgot to put fuel in that wing.
I was going to tighten those bolts, but I got fired. So,
but that does go to show you that people are surviving and making decisions based on government bailouts. So I don't even fully understand whatever the executive order that Trump signed as far as continuing the benefits. What was it? 400, I think. But 300 of it, I think, was from the federal government, and then the rest was from the states. And even then, the states have to opt in. And many
said, go fuck it. Yeah, the states all said, 201, all said, go fuck yourself.
Or not. Well, and that's and they didn't all do it. And guess who didn't do that was Hawaii, because they're dying. Their whole economy is tourism, and they have no tourism. So they signed up for it because they need it. The airlines are still living off of it. It really makes you think, and you got to stop and wonder that, are the decisions that are being made based on this cushion that people have? And I go back to this too, these fucking politicians. Every person who's calling for national lockdowns is either somebody who's extremely wealthy and doesn't need the money, or they're a government worker who's getting paid anyway. And did you see this fucking story about Newsom, who said he was going to take, he called for all state workers to take a 10% pay cut back when the pandemic happened. And guess what report just came out? He didn't take a pay cut, and he blamed it on some computer glitch.
No, I didn't hear any of that. Shit. I will tell you something about Newsom that I just found out, and I know you're not watching the conventions, right?
Right, I haven't watched them. I pulled some clips, but I haven't watched them.
Yeah, a couple nights ago, let me see if I can get this right. Donald Trump Jr., right? Mm-hmm. Is it Eric?
I don't know. Okay. I know what you're talking about. His girlfriend is Newsom's ex-wife. The
supposed Latina
that
is half Irish.
I never saw her before.
No. And she's a loud talker to the max. I mean, it's like she came out of that Seinfeld episode into that speech. Right?
You're right.
So she is Newsom's ex-wife or ex-girlfriend or something.
No, yeah, they were married.
They were married, yeah. Wow. See, I mean, I thought he was gay. So I thought that's probably would send you. Yeah. Being married to her would make you gay. That's probably not good for the podcast.
Well, I don't know if it's, get you in legal trouble. We could cut it out.
Okay. Feel free to edit as you.
The only place I worry about getting the COVID is in jail. So we don't want to send you there on purpose.
Right. Thank you. Well, I'm too pretty to go to jail. That's always been the case. True. Always will be. What's the gal's name? Lori something or other from the TV show, the one that got convicted. Laughlin, yeah. Right? I just read an article, and taking a break from all the serious shit I do all day long. And I pulled up a browser and saw an article on how scared she is of her 2 months she's going to do in jail.
Yeah.
And that's 2 months compared to, I think, the other gal from Housewives that got convicted of this, I can't think of her name either. The one, she got 11 days because she didn't act like a fucking idiot and try to plead not guilty to something that you're so obviously guilty of that, a 3-year-old could figure it out. And so she got 11 days in jail and this gal got 2 months. She's afraid of the COVID.
That's what she's saying publicly to try to get leniency. I mean, really, that's bullshit.
Well, I thought you said if you go to jail, you get the COVID.
I'm worried about you getting the COVID going to jail.
Well, that would be bad.
Yeah. So we're going to try to keep you out of it.
Okay. Let's keep me out of jail.
But yeah, I just, this fucking world has gone mad.
It is pretty crazy. I think, this just kind of keeps going on. And so many things are so different as a result of it that it's hard not to think about it all the time. I mean, just the fact that I'm here, in this room that you see behind me and not the office, there's no real reason for me to be at the office. I mean, I've been going in a couple times a week, one way or the other, drop stuff off, say hi to people. But past that, I mean, on a regular basis, I it's a lot easier for me to work here than it is there.
Well, and because, that's going to be the new norm.
Yeah, and it's also because there somebody, he whose name shall not be mentioned, never shuts the fuck up. So, I can always hear his voice.
Now you are going to wind up in jail.
And so because Voldemort, never shuts the hell up. So I found it very difficult. I tried to spend a little time there this week and I'm like, wow, I can't concentrate because through the walls, I hear this never ending drone of nonsense. So,
well, imagine, speaking of concentrating, imagine if you're a school age kid and you're trying to go back to school and you're doing this distance learning. And imagine if you have more than one kid. So you're two, three, four kids in a household. Do you have four, you know, even two? Do you have two separate workstations or quiet places that kids in different grades can go learn? Can the parents supervise that and still work? And this is, these are the families with means, Mike.
Right.
I mean, what if you don't have anything?
I went over to my nephew's house the other day, right? Like I told you, to meet the guy, and Sheila had a chance to show me what they set up for Connor. He's in kindergarten, right? This is his first year of regular kindergarten, which are not
it's terrible. Doing,
So, I mean, he's so lucky. One kid, they've got the garage is completely converted into a room, and it has walls and shit, right? And so he's got a desk, you know, his mom's got a computer right there that she can work at, you know, and help him at the same time. He's got a chalkboard. I mean, you know, and they're not rich.
Right. And what you just described is the best case scenario.
Right.
The perfect situation for what we find ourselves in having to do remote learning.
Right. But I can't imagine four kids in that room.
Right. Well, even just him, it'll be interesting to see. And I was going to say, I hope he can adjust and do it quickly, but I don't even hope that. I hope he can actually get to school because that's what he needs.
Well, here's the thing. Once he gets done with this at 11, you know, this kindergarten stuff, and then he goes to school, right? He goes to the preschool.
A couple of days a week?
Every day.
Oh,
every
day. But a preschool is different than
30 to 4 or something.
So he's got kindergarten is public school, right? Because he's that age.
Right.
And then the preschool is just something they're doing to.
Right. Because he needs to be with other kids and you know, they got jobs, right?
Right.
I mean, Sheila can't sit there all day. Her mom, who we thought maybe had COVID recently, but no test came back positive. You know, she barely speaks English, so she's not going to be able to help him learn.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, that's been the built-in daycare when it didn't involve school. But now that they're school and Sheila spends the entire morning, you know, working with them, then she needs to work the rest of the day.
Right.
So for her, she's working till 9 or 10 o'clock at night to keep up, right? Because she doesn't start till 2 o'clock or something by the time she gets them off to school and back, and you know.
And if people don't realize this, if they don't see the need to put kids in school, this is just a tsunami of bad decisions.
There's a need. I get that. But Travis, this is not a good time to put kids into school.
Kids should never have been taken out of school. That's the major disconnect and the problem that I have over this whole thing is we call it a pandemic again. I'm not a denier, Mike. It's not a hoax.
I know, but how many tens of thousands of children would be included in those?
They wouldn't be. That's the reality. They wouldn't be because they were already in school. They were in school when this thing was here in our winter time, when there was already flu and everything else. This thing was here in the United States in December. They didn't close the schools until the end of March, and this whole thing went crazy. That's a fact.
Well, yeah, but at the end of March, there were so few cases
that we knew of. We didn't have tests. We weren't testing people.
Yeah, but you don't know any different now. You don't know that there were more. I mean, I don't. That assumption is not backed up that there were more cases than we know about.
Oh, that is true.
No. We know what we know, Travis, and we don't know stuff we don't know.
So, we know there's a multiplier. There's an assumption.
That's a false premise right there.
No, it's not a false premise. I don't know what the multiplier is. I don't know what the models say. But here's what we know is that there is this – I call it an assumption, but there's a factual multiplier, again, that I don't know what it is, that for every positive test, there's whatever the number is assumed other positive tests.
Okay, listen. I just got to back up for a second.
I told you I'd get you riled up.
Yeah. I'm going to stay calm. But, I mean, let's say, okay, you don't care about the kids getting sick, whatever. How are you going to – what do you think that you're going to send the teachers and the staff and all the people at the schools that they never shut these schools down and those people were out there in that? And how do you think that's – I mean – you know, teachers, I mean, there are some young teachers, but there have been administrators and stuff are older. How would you have done it? I mean, are you saying that, I mean, I'm not sure I understand. The deal is here.
Let me break it down.
The fact that they were in school in March, I don't think that has anything to do with anything. So, you know, going forward through March and April, let's say, as the cases were spreading uncontrollably, especially in New York, but before they got around the rest of the country, you pull people out, you shut down the schools to try to protect the kids and the staff. What's your problem with that?
My problem is you remove the most vulnerable. If you look it up, I don't have it pulled up in front of me, but 80% of the deaths are 65 and older. That's a fact.
What difference does that make?
And the number gets smaller as you go down in age groups. The 0 to 24 is almost doesn't even register. So those that age group is not vulnerable, not as vulnerable as the older age groups. So the fact is, and I've said this before, people are not dying in the streets. Bodies are not piling up in the streets. This virus is highly contagious, but it's not all that deadly when you compare it to other things. We already went over this.
And here's another thing. You're making a mistake when you just look at deaths. Okay, what is the number? I don't have it in front of me. It's millions of people in the United States.
Or what?
Got it.
Yeah, and guess what? Millions of people in the United States have recovered with no treatment.
Okay, but that's many, many, and I don't have the statistic, but many of those people are going to have lifelong effects from having the virus. And by only looking at deaths, you're missing a huge part of the
problem. And by ignoring the people that have recovered that never even had symptoms or never even knew they were sick.
Not ignoring them, but that's not part of what we're talking about. We're talking about, hey, what's the effect of this, right? If people get it and recover, that's zero effect. But if you get it and then sustain lifelong lung injury as a result of it, that is significant. And that does need to be considered.
So why?
Not in the death number. Okay.
Listen,
which is preposterously high to begin with.
It's not preposterously high. In fact, no, listen, we talked about this before, and this I do have in front of me. This is about a week old, but we're over 170,000, right?
Uh-huh.
So maybe it's even 180 at this point. We are probably going to get to that 250 number that the White House said back in April. Mm-hmm. But what did we say? The one thing that everybody compares it to is the 1918 flu. That thing was in just the U.S., 675,000.
I see that. I've seen that number.
And what was the – I don't even know what the population of the U.S. was at that time. So as a percentage, it's significantly higher. Right.
Yeah, but
– And there was
– Is that the result you're going for?
No, what I'm going for is this. What I want people to understand is you, politicians, governments, you can't control this. To say the word, you know, we need to control it, you can't. What you can do is control your own actions. If you're afraid, stay home. If you're going to go out, and I've said this before, I'm not an anti-masker. I wear a mask. If those are common sense things that can keep people safe for those that want to and need to go out, that's what we need to do. But there's other things that weren't thought of that we're now seeing. Schools, for example, what we're talking about, it's not an option. It's not an option to keep kids out of school forever. An option to have distance.
Well, not forever, Travis. Where do you throw that in there?
Because we got lucky, if you want to call it that, that this happened towards the end of a calendar school year for most schools in the U.S. We got lucky that we just went over the summer break. But here we are now coming in.
What difference does it make if they keep schools closed for another year till this thing quiets down and we get some testing and some stuff in place?
I think that is a deadly gamble to try to take on, to try to figure out. That's an experiment that's never been done, Mike, to say, hey, let's try to cease education for an entire year just to protect this vulnerable population. Think about it. I want to report back from you.
Think about it. I don't see shit. I don't see
because you're not in school. You're out of school. It doesn't affect you. And you don't have school age children. So I want to report from you as how Connor is adjusting as we get into the next couple of months.
Oh, he's fine. I'll give you a report. Well, he's an only child.
If he comes back and says 2 + 2 = 5, I'm either going to blame it on the distance learning or blame it on the democratic math.
Well, see, here's the problem for him, right? He could skip kindergarten and first grade. He's already well past Korean mother. Okay. Kids already passed first grade. So, you know, whether he goes to school or doesn't, whether he learns anything during this time or not, is not that big of a deal. Although I kind of get what you're saying. And certainly as kids get older, maybe it makes a difference. But Does it really? I mean, if you have to change the school setup for a year, I get it. It's not going to be easy on parents with two kids or three or any kids, right? I get it. It's not perfect, but you know,
it's not.
I just don't see how you just take school.
Here's how you do it. You have to balance it with what's in front of you. Like I said, this, I'm not denying this pandemic. I'm not calling it a hoax, but it's certainly not. It's not knocking everybody.
It's a fucking epidemic, Trav. It's an epidemic.
Yeah,
what is it you're not seeing about that? Forget the pandemic thing. That just means the world. I mean, if this was an epidemic of anything in this country, we would have to take certain actions to try to get the best outcome we can. You're suggesting that you just don't do anything.
That's exactly what I'm suggesting because of what it is. I use this analogy. If it was nuclear radiation, if it was nuclear fallout from an attack that actually affects every single person, then that's different. This is a fucking flu. It's a fucking virus that isn't.
It's not a flu.
It is.
Okay? It's not a flu. It's not the flu.
It's a slightly deadlier flu.
That is terrible, bad misinformation. Don't. I mean,
that's my opinion. I'm not. You know, this isn't from Fox News.
No. I'm sorry. My opinion and alternative facts ain't gonna fly with me. Okay. So here's the deal. It's coronavirus. It's a brand new disease. There is no other disease just like it. And if you're not going to accept those facts, then you just can't even, you know, you can't even talk about it. I mean, you don't have to like everything.
Mike, we now,
you can't just make it something it's not.
Listen, I'm not suggesting I'm qualified to talk about the origins of it. What I am qualified to talk about is now 6 months into it, we know a lot about it. And most specifically, what I think is the most important thing that we need to focus on, we know what the results of it are. And we know what
contagious as fuck.
And 80% of the people don't even know they have it. 80% of the people don't even know they get it. That's the problem. It's highly contagious. You're right.
You have to show me something to back that up.
It's kind of like Russian roulette. Except, you know, maybe every couple of barrels, there's a bullet versus, you know, one in every spin. Because the reality is, it is exactly what you just said. It's highly contagious. The problem is that most people don't show any signs. They don't have any illnesses. They don't get sick. And those that do, the vast majority of that group recover. So when you say things like, yes, there's effects that last a lifetime, developmental effects or whatever, things that we don't even know, I'm not disputing that. But that is such a small portion of go all the way back up the chain, right? That's such a small portion of the people that actually got sick. It's a smaller portion of the people that got it and showed no signs. You see what I'm saying?
No.
I'm assuming there are – this isn't the Black Plague. I'm assuming there are things in history and potentially in the future that can wipe out the human population. This isn't fucking it.
Wow. All right.
Right?
You know, tell it to the families. That's all I can tell you. Tell it to the families of the 170,000 people that are dead from this.
Those people,
many, many, many of those people did not need to die.
You're right about that. But is that, and we've talked about this too, those people didn't need to die. Did government sentence them to death? Certainly, you know, Trump didn't. And if you're going to argue that he did, which is certainly one of the Democratic talking points, you're going to have people like Cuomo in a lot of heat for this nursing home shit. And I don't subscribe to that. But there's a lot of people early on and even now that age group and the people in the nursing homes, that group is the one that is dropping like flies. You have people with compromised immune systems, already have underlying health conditions, living in close proximity to one another. What do you think's going to happen? Did government sentence those people to their deaths? And that's where I'm coming from. I'm not a scientist. I'm not an epidemiologist. You know,
but you're making a lot of claims. You don't have any backup for.
I'm not claiming these things. I'm giving you my reaction to them. I'm not in a position.
Don't count your reactions in facts.
They're facts in the sense that that's what I believe, and I think that's what's important. Let me qualify that. I'm not saying
because you believe something doesn't make it a fucking fact.
I didn't say that. What I'm saying is these are my beliefs. Therefore, I'm voicing what I think is important. I'm voicing my opposition to the reality that we've been living with in this country, this tyrannical government that we've been dealing with, And by the way, that, I mean, listen, I'm not a, you know me, I'm not supporting the Democrats. I'm not a Trump fan either. The issue is, and my concern is, the total collapse of society that happened over this. And you know what they say in history, that we're going to be taken down from within. And that seems to be, you know, what's going to happen. So all I'm saying is this, I'm not a scientist. I'm not throwing numbers up to say, you know, elect me because this is what I would do. I'm not running for any type of office or platform. I'm just saying we got to start thinking. What do we say on this podcast? If we're all thinking the same, then someone is not thinking. We all can't be saying the same thing. This irrational groupthink is fucking nonsense. And the bottom line is, the longer that this goes on, and you tie it back to what we were talking about a minute ago, how far out do you want to look into the future? How far out are events going to be canceled? How far out are schools going to be canceled, or this remote learning is going to go on? The longer you entertain that as even an option is dangerous to me. That's what I'm saying. And I have to wonder, I have to think, Newsom certainly was one that said this back in March and April. He called it from the very beginning. And he said, he told his children that all of the models that he had seen didn't show that schools would be reopening this year. He said it back then. He said, I don't see sports in this state, certainly before the end of this calendar year. It makes you think.
Who cares?
Who cares? Mike, we know that this is not sustainable. This is not a sustainable path to keep people locked down. It's not. And anybody who advocates.
You can go anywhere you want.
No, you can't.
It doesn't mean that you sanction or hold large group activities, mass spreading events. It just go, well, we'll just see what happens. You know, maybe it'll be okay. Maybe
that's the same thing.
That's not the same as being locked.
I told you this before. No, listen, you define essential services and the movement of people, which is what we had in this country and we had in this state as early as March. Essential is food, water, and shelter. Anything that you add to that list is government picking winners and losers. And we've had examples of that all over this world. So if people want to go to church, if they want to go to weddings, if they want to go to funerals, that's not for anybody to tell them what to do. Mm. That's the reality.
Okay. I'm not going to argue that with you.
So I'm just so passionate about this because we're beyond this initial shock, if you want to call it that. I certainly mm-hmm. think that that's a fair statement. That
I got a question for you.
Yeah.
Do you think this pandemic is as dangerous to you as you are to that plant behind you?
You know, I gave up even watering it.
Oh my God. Listen, listen, you're one of the fortunate few. You can afford this. Get a new plant or a fake plant.
You know what actually happened was I've been locked in here.
It's got coronavirus.
No, I've been locked. You know, I've been forced to give up my freedoms from my government. So I've been locked in this little hole and, you know, I drink a lot of coffee to survive. So I've been peeing in the plant. I thought that was, you know, I read that you could drink your own pee to survive if you had to. So I gave it to my plant and obviously it didn't work.
I think your plant, if that's what you've been doing, I think your plant would be okay.
All right. Well, you know, maybe I'll switch up my fluids.
All right. Well, I think some really good points there. I mean, I am hearing you. Okay. Hey, you know, like they say in South Africa, I see you.
I see you.
Yeah. I've heard that a few times. Recently, in different situations.
Let's switch gears for a second.
Stuff for me to think about. You know, my opinions. Okay, since we brought the opinion word into this conversation, my opinions about this are flexible because honestly, I don't think we're going to be able to assess what's true and not true about regarding this pandemic until we get virtually on the other side of it, which means there's a vaccine and there's some effective treatment if you get it. And yeah, I don't think we're ever going to stop getting it.
That's true. But just like the flu,
devastating effects of a very contagious respiratory disease will be quelled. Right. And it will take vaccines will help. It's going to be endemic. So there'll be no, it's not going to be measles, right? You're not going to get measles or take a vaccine and be done with it. You're going to have to, just like the flu, Travis, you're just going to have to.
Isn't that what I said? It's just like the flu.
Well, I mean, the long term, I mean, the way you're going to handle it is you're going to have a vaccine, you're going to have treatments. And we're changing some of the things we do, right? I mean, I think hands going in mouths and eyes is substantially reduced. Do people still absentmindedly stick their finger in their nose or rub their eye or, you know, lick their fingers so they can open a plastic bag? Those kind of dumb moves are the same things that give you the flu. So in that sense, it's very much like the flu, but the actual effects of it are not flu-like. Okay.
They're not. And I don't disagree with you. And we're kind of going in circles, but if people needed to change that behavior because millions upon millions were dropping dead by putting their fingers in their butt or licking envelopes or whatever. But what I have a problem with.
I never thought about sticking my finger in my butt so I could open a plastic bag. But now that you mention it, it might be good. It'd be fun.
And this goes back to what is the end game here? Again, these politicians. Another thing Newsom said early on was, I don't see us fully reopening until there's a vaccine. That is fucking frightening that you have somebody in power who would say something like that. He's not a scientist. He's not an economist. He's not anything but a political puppet who was elected. And then you stack that up against things that Fauci was saying as well. Vaccines take 18 months to 2 years to develop, and we're not going to reopen until we have a vaccine. Wow, that is crazy. Fauci saying, we're not going to shake hands anymore. Fuck you. Don't tell me what to do. I'm going to stick my finger in my butt and shake your hand. So
let me make a note of that, because I need that for future reference. I get that. I understand.
It just makes me angry. I don't enjoy being right when I'm right about this stuff. And if I'm wrong, I love to be enlightened. But it's not looking good, because one of the things that I thought very early on is this is going to lead to civil unrest. And I certainly didn't think that we'd have a race war on top of it, but obviously that's part of the world we live in now. And it's only going to get worse the longer we have government.
Now, I think we beat this one to death, but that's something we should talk about on a future podcast.
Yeah, I agree. And it's
a far more interesting topic.
Well, that could be, the topic of every show, but let's get back to that, because I wanted to, before this gets too old, did you watch the DNC, the convention?
Oh,
it was last week, right? I was on
vacation. Most of it. Yeah, I think I did. Yeah.
What the fuck is up with AOC? Why did they give her a minute and a half to speak if they knew she was going to be a loudmouth problem? I gotta play you this. Hang on a second.
Go ahead.
Good evening, bienvenidos, and thank you to everyone here today endeavoring towards a better, more just future for our country and our world. In fidelity and gratitude to a mass people's movement working to establish 21st century social, economic, and human rights, including guaranteed health care, higher education, living wages, and labor rights for all people in the United States. A movement striving to recognize and repair the wounds of racial injustice, colonization, misogyny, and homophobia, and to propose and build reimagined systems of immigration and foreign policy that turn away from the violence and xenophobia of our past. A movement that realizes the unsustainable brutality of an economy that rewards explosive inequalities of wealth for the few at the expense of long-term stability for the many, and who organized a historic grassroots campaign to reclaim our democracy. In a time when millions of people in the United States are looking for deep systemic solutions to our crises of mass evictions, unemployment, and lack of health care, in el espíritu del pueblo and out of a love for all people, I hereby second the nomination of Senator Bernard Sanders of Vermont for President of the United States of America.
Your people have zero fucking chance.
Well, I,
wow.
I mean, that represents the far left, wing of the party. I mean, that's for sure. And out of four nights, 8+ hours, she spoke for a minute and a half in support of a candidate that's already dropped out. It's just convention.
She's a liability. Why would they put her up there?
look, there's a lot of people in this country that I mean, there's probably a lot of people that are in favor of everything she said, right? And I'm pretty sure I know which of the things she said, if not every single thing she said, that you don't like. I get that, but I don't think a minute and a half out of 8 hours, that's really nothing to be concerned about.
Yeah, I'm not concerned about the time they gave her, but what I don't understand is, number one, Joe Biden early on was the favorite. I didn't get that because I didn't think he'd even make it, right? Thought he was going to drop dead. This was even before the COVID. But he really was never the crazy extreme left. He was more of a kind of a central guy. Mm-hmm. Why do you think he feels pressured to bring in some of the nutcases from the far left and then even give her a voice? And she didn't even endorse him. I don't even understand that. You've got the nomination and he's had the nomination.
They had a couple of people talk for Bernie Sanders, and that's, and Trav, look, that's not complicated. They want to bring in, so Sanders had a coalition over two different elections, 4 years apart, of people that were not traditional Democrats. You know, they're too far left. They're independents. They were never part of the Democratic Party. They want to get as many of those people as they can into the booth to vote for the Democrats in opposition to Trump. It's no deeper or more complicated than that.
I understand that. If this was a football game and we were drawing up the game plan, I would throw that fucking idea out. That's not going to work. She is your Ross Perot. She's going to force people to leave the party going, I got to separate myself from this nut job. Mm. And I don't understand why Biden feels like he needs to do that. You know, you already secured this thing for the last 6 months. He's been locked in his basement. You didn't need to bring her on there. And I'm not disputing the time they gave her, but.
Well, unlike the Republican Party, this isn't being run by one guy. And it's not being run by Biden.
Here's what I think. I'm talking strategy now.
Right. It's completely different. Trump is running the entire Republican Party start to finish. No matter what he says, that's what goes. And that's fine. That's the Republicans, which are not one of, I understand, and not a supporter of Trump. They have decided that, you know, their best chance is to get behind Trump and hope his base comes through and they drag some scared white people along with them.
You know,
other than that, they don't have a fucking shot either. Right. I mean, it was a very close. It was a very close victory for Trump 4 years ago. And only because of the I'm going to forget the name of it. What is the fucking, what's the thing that, what do we use? The college?
Oh, the electoral college. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was a very narrow electoral college victory.
Yeah.
Right?
It won't be this
separated
time.
By a few thousand votes here and there.
Right.
Could have been a different story. So, you know, they're just throwing all in. I mean, it's been so bad. I mean, it's just so unfortunate for Trump. If you are a Trump supporter, which I know you're not, that this COVID thing destroyed the economy just before the election. I mean, if that hadn't happened, I would have little hope that Democrats would have.
Let me key in on that though. And that's kind of one of the points I was trying to make is I don't think the Democrats need to be as crazy as they are. Take the economy, for example. Historically, if it was just the economy, if it was just the stock market and we didn't have the pandemic, probably would be not even a question, right, of a reelection.
I don't know. It would be a question, but go ahead.
It'd be difficult, right? In those, in historically, when you've had those circumstances with the incumbent, I think the odds are that you're going to get reelected. But I think the Democrats are shooting themselves in the foot. They don't need to be this extreme. And Biden in particular.
Hold on. There are elements within the party that go farther to the left than Joe Biden, for sure.
Right.
But
he needs to separate himself. I'm just talking purely as a game plan. I do not want to see Biden elected. I don't. We talked about this last time.
Right. But they need the Bernie Sanders coalition, as many of them as they can get. I mean,
anybody who's a centrist, anybody who really is saying, give me a reason, please, not to vote for Trump. Like, remember the whole Paul Ryan example 4 years ago? We have to hold our nose and just get behind this guy because he's apparently the front runner of the Republican Party. You have a group of people who are actually in the Republican Party saying, give us a reason to defect and go to the other side. And Biden needs to separate himself from those crazy leftist extremists. I think they're shooting themselves in the foot, Mike. They are.
I understand. I appreciate your opinion on that. But I think that what Biden has done is he's coached this in good versus evil, right? I don't know if you watched the speech, but
well, here we got his highlights. Let's let the man talk.
If you entrust me with the presidency, I will draw on the best of us, not the worst. I'll be an ally of the light, not the darkness.
That's right.
It's time for us, for Star we, Wars. The people.
Sounds like Star Wars.
To come together.
This is the Jedi
Make no
speech.
Mistake. United, we can and will overcome this season of darkness in America. We'll choose hope over fear, facts over fiction, fairness over privilege.
Better than when he said facts over truth.
You know, I'm a proud. In this analogy, Trump is Darth Vader and Cheney and Karl Rove are actually the emperor rolled in the one in the background. So, I mean, here's the thing.
Who is he? Is he
this
Luke?
Is truly this. Here's the reason why I don't think I'm hoping what you're saying about the fact that he didn't denounce AOC or whatever. I don't think that has much impact on the average.
No, I don't mean that.
Democratic voter. But
here's really
I think all he really needs to do to win this is to just make the case to people that, you know, he's not Donald Trump. And here's the whole Trump strategy. Commit so many crimes, do so many reprehensible things, you know, flail against so many valuable norms of behavior within government that nobody can keep up with it, right? You get stuck. And
you're giving the man too much credit that's his strategy. That's a byproduct of who he is.
It's the whole administration strategy. And trust me, I'm not giving Trump credit for shit. Right. He has a little bit of media savvy, but there are some real Nazis working with him behind the scenes. His brother-in-law, which is ironic since he's Jewish, his Stephen. I need my cheat sheet.
Stephen Tyler.
No, not Stephen Tyler. The little bald headed racist fuck that's been in there the whole time. Stephen Miller. And listen. Their plan, and this is the truth. Their plan is to do so much shit so fast that nobody can keep up with it. We get lost and we get into a discussion whenever people start talking in politics and the anti-Trump people make this mistake a lot. And this is something I'm going to try not to do. You start talking about some thing that he just did, the latest thing. And there's a new thing every fucking day that he does. And that's what you talk about. And you go crazy and it's a cumulative effect. And you seem so irate over something that somebody on the other side of that conversation can say, that's not even a big deal. What the hell are you talking about? Why are you so irate? You have Trump derangement syndrome. That's what they've named it since the very beginning. Because we're talking about some stupid shit he did today to divert your attention off of the real issues.
Grab him by the pussy.
When we should be talking about putting kids in cages and things like that. So now it is you just have to stop talking about the individual things and just make the case that this administration and Trump and all the people associated with them, for the most part, this is the dark side. This is evil. It's time. Joe Biden is the Jedi. That is the case he's making. And so, and we'll just have to see, because there are many, many more people in this country that are against Trump than are for him. And it just really is a matter of getting them to the polls, and then it'll be a victory. Well, and here's the thing, right? The other part of the Republican strategy is to bury you in the bullshit and commit so many outrageous acts that nobody can stay focused on anything long enough for the consequences to take hold. And the other thing is to try to prevent people from voting, period. Voter suppression has been a Republican SOP for quite some time, and it's only gotten worse over the last 10 years. So, you know, mark my words, this stuff with the post office and all the rest of it, it's a combined multi-front attack to suppress the vote. They're not trying to, they know damn well that if we could figure out, you know, in Australia, everybody has to vote. And I'm going to say that you're going to rail against that. And I can understand that. We're not looking for more government mandates on things about voting. But so short of requiring everybody in the country to vote, we should make it absolutely as easy as possible for as many people to vote as possible. That is strictly not there. I mean, they have, I mean, McConnell, all of them, they've been, we know damn well that their best chance is to suppress the vote of non-white voters in the rest of the country.
Let's assume that was actually a strategy. Let's assume that, you know, that was drawn up on one of the plays to suppress the vote for this current election. We can get into the details about the post office. There's a lot of truth in the ramifications of voter suppression and the details about vote by mail, which, you know, I think a lot of that stuff I would agree with you on. However, to just say that the post office is a key component, that's a fallacy. That, you know, you want to talk about the financials, that argument makes an assumption that the post office was on solid ground before the last couple of months when the new postmaster general went in there. We know that's not true. So we can we can get into that. But let me just tell you this. Here's I think that none of that is relevant right now. And I'm talking about from the 30,000 foot view, the strategy of who's going to win this election. And, you know, I guess the Republican convention is going on right now. What does it end today or tomorrow? But here's the thing. The Democrats, I think more so now than 4 years ago. Remember, I said this before, that I think that the Trump victory was a vote against Hillary for a variety of reasons. That's I think the mindset of people. I don't necessarily think it was, yes, there's Trump's base, but it wasn't about that. It's even worse this time around, I really believe. And when you're the incumbent, all you really have to do is say, if you're happy with the way things are going, vote for us. When you're the challenger, you have to spell out specifically what your plan is going to be to improve the lives of everybody. And they're not doing that. And that was my point about AOC. That was my point about their entire week that they wasted. They said nothing other than, we're not Trump. We're not Darth Vader. We're not the evil enemy. All right, I get that. But that makes a huge assumption. You're gambling that the people, that's enough for people. And I don't think it is. I think they need to spell out specifically. And the few examples that they did give and people that they allowed up there, like the AOCs of the world, she's against capitalism. We can't have rich people in this country. Billionaires are illegal. You shouldn't have that. Nobody should be a billionaire. Colonization. I mean, man, we can talk a lot about the history of this country. And, you know, there's even a new topic for another day, this whatever it is, 1614 project or whatever, the origins of this country. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about an election of a 240-year-old country in the year 2020. We've been colonized. We're here. We've already fought the wars. So that's a non-starter. They're not doing themselves any favors. They haven't come up with any concrete plan to say, here's why you need to choose us. And Biden's fucked here because he's muddying the waters. He's diluting his message. He's diluting his support by surrounding himself with people who are, I believe, perceived as nut jobs. And he's going to lose support. I honestly believe that. And again, as long as Trump doesn't do anything, I say do anything crazy, but fuck, the guy's done crazy things since the beginning. There's been so many examples over the last 4 years where you would have thought, okay, this is the one. He's going to go out on this. They're going to get
here. Well, here's the thing. His corruption, which is what it all comes down to, is priced into the market. Okay. It's been absorbed. Nothing can shock anybody anymore. And that is part of the plan. That is the strategy. That's always been his strategy through his entire life. Okay. So shame on us for bringing in somebody who has ran his entire life this way. Right. The shock and awe of his ridiculous actions throughout his business career are no different than what he's been doing.
I know.
Here.
I agree.
He's surprised with a far right wing cadre of white supremacists that, I mean, if you don't know that Stephen Miller, and all these guys that are around him, his son-in-law, him, his people, Dick Cheney, all the rest of these guys, they hate these fucking people. Right. Here's the deal. Hey, here's a meme I saw the other day. I don't have the recording, but I did write it down so I can remember it. Here, I'm just going to see it for you. It says, hey, remember when you donated to the Mexico wall building because you're a racist? Those guys stole your money because you're also stupid, right? So, you know, they arrested Bannon for this. I mean, it's just sleazy. It has nothing to do with Trump, to be honest with you. Bannon's 1,000 times smarter than Donald Trump. And that doesn't stop him from being a slimy piece of shit.
And so far, there's nobody smarter than the Trump campaign on the Democratic side. Think about that for a minute. they're not able to come up with anything other than the guy in office is a criminal. That's all they're saying. He's a crook. He's a criminal. He's the evil empire.
What else do you need, Travis?
Listen, this isn't about convincing me. This is about convincing the voter. And this is my opinion. And right, we got a small wager on this, but it's my opinion. I think they need to say something more. They can't have this crazy shit.
I don't give a shit. Right. Here's the thing.
But Mike, you can't
if you can't win this election by contrasting and pointing out the criminality, the corruption, the amoral behavior of this con artist motherfucker, then you deserve it. I mean, if people don't
exactly that alone,
then they deserve them.
That is a true statement. And the reality is the only thing they've got is this guy's a crook, but we're socialists. And that will be better for you.
Yeah. Well, I don't even think they make that. It's just this guy's a crook and we're not. Nobody's making the case that they're socialists. And don't let the 1 minute appearance by AOC last week that's already been forgotten by everybody except you get in your head. Okay. The case isn't going to be, hey, we're socialists and they're crooks. The case is
they're crooks,
they're corrupt, and we're not. And Biden has eight full years as vice president, plus a 30-year political career that backs that statement up. Trump has nothing but a con man. And look, if people don't see it, then they don't see it. And I'll give you the, what did we make it? $10?
I think we had to go $20? I think we had to go up to 20.
Well, you had to go up to 20 because.
But here's the point. They are making specific examples that are only hurting their cause. I mean, the one big thing that Biden has come out with is his tax plan, potentially making Elizabeth Warren his Secretary of the Treasury. None of that is what the American people want to hear. I don't think there was anybody who
there's a lot of people that do want to hear that.
No, they don't. There's not a lot, which is why she was one of the first people to drop out of the race. But I don't think there was too much opposition to the conversation about corporate income tax, right? When this first was developing, there was support.
You mean the tax break that Trump did a couple of years ago for corporations, that one?
Yes.
That tax break?
Yes. Let me say what I mean.
Yeah.
It was like personal income tax, you know, it's a progressive scale, but it was 35%. And there was support on both sides that understood in order for us to be competitive, that needed to be lower. Did it need to be 30, 20, 25, 18? And I think the real issue is where it settled.
What is it now? What did he drop it down to? 18?
God, I don't even know. Is it 19 or 20? 21, I think it is what it is. I think it's 21. Hmm. 21 is where it settled. So a significant decrease. 35 is ridiculous. And don't forget, just like individuals, corporations also pay state income tax depending on where they are. And I can tell you California is about 9%.
Listen, so, no companies needed that tax break. None.
That's not true. And here's the point.
Company used that money the way they were supposed to.
It doesn't matter. And that's where things got lost in the weeds. It started to be sold that way, that if we get this tax break, then we will do this. You know, we'll give people bonuses. We'll hire people. It'll trickle down to the working man.
Is that what we did?
No, I don't even know. But that's not the point. The point is, that's not for government to say. You either give me the tax break or you don't. And if you don't, you don't get to tell me how to spend my money. And if you do, you don't get to tell me how to spend my money. The conversation was, is that tax rate too high? Is it punitive?
Yeah, I don't think I could take a position where I would support the government telling you had to do it. I mean, my position would be that.
But it turned into that. And I think that's the problem. It turned into that. It turned into this conversation where the government is going to dictate who sits on these boards. I'll say it again. I said it last time. You look at where we are. I think, see, I'm glad I'm recording this so we can capture your look. If you took, you know, say the two of us, put us in a room or people like us or a group of people, if you fucking Democrats would allow us to congregate, we wouldn't be spreading the COVID.
That is the plan, you know.
I know.
So because, look, here's the thing. You got to understand, Travis, the Democrats are a lot smarter than you think. The way Trump wins is he has these big rallies where he talks his, you know, does his Hitler impersonation and all his fucking little white nationalist cronies in the audience, you know, salute him and all that stuff. He feeds off that. The Democratic plan here was to pump up the coronavirus, make people so afraid that they could ban these type of gatherings so that he couldn't have rallies. So without the rallies, he's going to lose. Let's just face it. It's a brilliant plan. I mean, I didn't want to spill the beans publicly like this, although I think probably with the amount of people that are hearing this, there's not much as at stake.
Isn't that sounds like voter suppression to me, Mr. Post Office General?
It's Trump suppression, not voter suppression.
Well, here's what I'm saying. If you were to put us in a room and we go down the issues, if we were told, hey, you can't come out of this room until you agree on a plan, we probably could do that on most of the issues. And that's what concerns me the most about where we are in this world. We are forever, I think, I hope not, but we are just so entrenched in this two-party system. We're entrenched in trying to divide people. Make no mistake, yeah, Trump is, the king of that, but the Democrats are no better. You know, they're fighting fire with fire, essentially. And everybody wants to divide everybody. Everybody wants to point out where you're wrong. If you don't even side on the right side of an argument, if you don't agree with the way the media has written something, you're automatically a racist or you're whatever, right? And that's dangerous. And I think the bottom line is
you're racist when you're racist.
That's true. Of course it is. But the point is, not everything fits on two sides, right? Not everything fits on this side of the line or that side of the line. And that's what both sides, both major political parties in this country are trying to do. And it's dangerous. And that's my point is it's starting to break down society. I really believe that. What's the old adage? You know, you don't talk about religion or politics at the dinner table. And for the most part, when you take that away, people live a pretty good life and people get along. And it's only when you start to repeat the headlines of whatever side you tend to fall on that things fall apart. But if you really were forced to come up with a solution and try to pave the way forward, I bet you, and I hope anyway, that's my optimistic view, is that we could do that. But goddamn, it doesn't look good right now.
Well, you and I could do it. But yeah, it's hard for people when they don't agree. They come out of the disagreement pissed. I mean, and that's the problem, right? I mean, we're not going to agree on a lot of stuff. And like you said before, that's kind of the reason why we have opted to do this, even if it's just for our own sanity.
Right.
And I don't want to lose sight of that. And I don't want to, it's our motto, right? If we're all thinking the same thing. I mean, we brought it up twice now. We should actually be scrolling it across the screen here on the video, right? Somehow it should be going across both our faces, but this looks a lot like a TV show right here. I can tell you right now, better production values than most TV shows, right?
Except for my dying piss plant in the background.
Yeah. Well, you might want to take your bathroom out of the set.
I'm just tired of people telling people what to do. That's all.
Yeah. Look, you know what? I'm not acquiescing to that because I don't want to argue it. I feel the same way. I just think that a close examination of this is valuable, right? Even though we both feel that way, I think we probably have some different opinions about what government's role is. And I think that's well worth discussing, right? And I like the whole topic of, hey, could we come up with an answer? Because the truth is we probably could. And I think that's something that's worth being talked about more.
Yeah. And just to interject real quick, it's different than the theory of compromise. And I think that's one of the problems with the way our government is set up today is it's built in with this understanding that you're going to compromise always or try to anyway. The spirit is to compromise. And in doing so, somebody always loses. And that's dangerous. And I think that to our example, you know, I think people like us, and we're just a small example of that. I think that I hope for humanity, more people are like that, but it would be less about compromise and it would be more about understanding and doing the right thing going forward. In other words, I bet you we would come out with just agreeing because we have more in common and we have more similarities than we do have differences. And it would be more in the spirit of agreement than it would be in compromise.
And, you know, I don't know how long, I mean, we're at an hour and a half, so I don't know how much longer you have, but let me say that going forward. So, I mean, I kind of hearing you say, hey, I'd like to see Trump out of office, but the Democrats it looks to me like they're fucking this up. That's what I'm hearing you say. For whatever reasons, whether it's AOC or, you know, Biden's.
Don't get me wrong. Yes, that's exactly what I said. However, I don't want the Democrats either. Not only they're saying the wrong thing because they're going to do the wrong thing.
Well, here's
two bad choices, Mike.
that's a perfect segue into what I was in my real point here. This election isn't going to come down to AOC or anything like that. It's going to come down to who the majority of people, and then that's going to need to translate into the majority in the Electoral College, feel that Biden is more likely to do the right thing going forward than Trump, who has had 4 years to prove that he will do the wrong thing every fucking time.
Well, let me,
the entire Republican Party has acquiesced and co-signed his that plan. And
I don't think it'll come down to who. I think it'll come down to what. What I think people are going to say, what party is going to make my life miserable?
Same thing. The message that you got out of the Democratic National Convention was, hey, we're going forward with all of these crises, most of them self-manufactured by Trump himself. We're going to do the right thing. And that's the case they're going to make between now and November.
And they got to be better.
They're
a total hypocrisy. For them to say we're in an economic catastrophe, well, that was created by them. That was created by the Democrats, not the Republicans, because that was created by
– I don't know, dude.
Confiscating people's businesses.
Whoever the president is when the economy tanks, it's his.
Yeah, I would most of the time agree with that, except for something that's unprecedented like this and something that didn't need to happen. This was a man-made economic collapse.
He hasn't lost support on the economy. He still has about a 60% approval rating on the economy. So the truth of it is, Travis, he's not suffering because of the economy.
Yeah, but first of all, we can't believe any of the polls.
Crazy scared of it, but his numbers are not being drugged down. His dump in the polls of late is not the economy. On the economy, he maintains a well above 50-55%, something like that, approval rating. His numbers have not dropped at all since it started on the economy. But on other things, yeah, he's in the toilet. He's being
polls
blamed.
Not a reflection of how people think. Polls are there to manipulate perception. I think we would have learned from the last time that we can't trust these polls.
Well, I that's a different. I mean, that's fine if you don't want to talk about polling and how
we
that
can talk about it. But just finish the point about.
You can't just take something like that and just dismiss it out of hand.
I'm not dismissing it.
If you are, then let's not talk about polls.
I'm not dismissing it. What I'm saying is this whole. When you talk about the Democrats, what do they have that's substantive? One of the things they're saying is that we have a catastrophe on our hands with the economy.
Substance has nothing to do with it.
It does.
It never does.
It has to.
Trump never had a single substantive thing.
He did. He ran on building the wall. What else did he run on?
Build the wall?
No.
His closest advisor, his campaign manager, stole $25 million from people and put it in his own pocket.
And?
Well, I mean, that's the closest he got. He hasn't built a single foot of wall since he's been.
Are you saying that an elected politician didn't do what he said he was going to do?
Yeah,
I guess he is more like them than we think.
Well, I'm trying to tell you, I guess the point I'm trying to make is that you're making the argument that, hey, the Democrats aren't countering all this crime and corruption put forth by the Trump administration with plans, which isn't true.
No, Biden has all kinds of plans. What I said was they're trying to solve a problem that they created, specifically the economy. That's a fact. Yes, they did.
If it's Travis, if it's nobody's fault, then it's nobody's fault. If the pandemic is nobody's fault and nobody could have done anything about it, then that goes both ways.
Now you're seeing the light. Of course, nobody could have done anything about it, but they did. Unfortunately, these fucking maniacs in the government, they did. They stole people's businesses. They made people stay home. And what we have now, like I said before, with, say, retail, curbside pickup, we're wearing masks, we have outdoor dining. We could have done that from the beginning and not shut down businesses and not had 40 million unemployed people, but we did that mostly on party lines, and that's a fact. So for the Democrats to now say we have this mass unemployment and economic collapse, yes, we do, but Trump didn't create that. Let's not forget about that.
Every Republican state government, after not taking steps, started to take the same steps because the death rates and the infections in their states went nuts. So, you know, that's not even true, dude.
It's true that it wasn't created by Trump, and that's what they're saying. That's their whole point is, hey, the economy isn't as strong as we think, and that's Trump's fault. And that's wrong. That's a lie.
It's still his responsibility. It happened on his presidency.
And you have to understand that, unfortunately,
like, there's no way to get around
Trump
it.
Trump and his party is the one who's trying to do more about it.
Here's the thing. They don't blame Trump for the economy. That's the point. My point I was trying to make.
I think they do.
He's not being blamed for the economy. He's being blamed for the pandemic.
Well, your people need to do a better job of the messaging because that's what they're saying. Let me. We want to let him finish.
How Democrat?
Well, you know, Trump wasn't responsible for the good economy either. Go ahead.
So let's let him ramble.
Carry
on.
The banner of our party into the general election. So it's with great honor and humility, I accept this nomination for president of the United States of America.
You just wanted to go out on a high note there.
I'm okay with it.
Listen.
So, yeah,
we got a ton more to get into. We didn't even really go into depth on the post office. We got RNC stuff this week. We might have to do another one tomorrow.
Just let me know when you're available. Let me look at my schedule. Yeah, I'm wide open.
We accomplished one thing.
This was a lot more fun than the last one. That's all I know.
It was, and I accomplished my goal, which was to try to get you. You were in a state of zen, and I wanted to, you know, rile you up a little bit.
Thank you. You know, at 64, zen is a good thing. So, I agree. Just so you know.
It must be the yoga. It shows.
All right, dude. Good one.
All right.
Send me the file.
You got it. Bye.
Bye.